This is an RTRFM podcast. RTRFM is a community organisation and relies on volunteer and listener support. To learn more about what we do, visit rtrfm.com.au.
Toast.
Toast.
Right here. Right now. The most important thing in life will always be the
Movie Squad.
Salute me, familia.
Hello, we're back. It's Movie Squad, the podcast, with me, Tristan Fidler.
And me, Simon Morato.
And yeah, we had a bit of an unofficial hiatus, but the podcast is back, striking your ears. Well, not striking your ears.
Wafting into the ears.
Comforting your ears with our weekly movie chat on a regular basis, where we basically share the reviews that we're doing. 7:30 every Friday morning with Taylor Strana on Breakfast with Taylor. And what did we talk about this week, Simon?
Well, this week you reviewed Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. Is that the correct title?
The correct subtitle,
I should say. I've not seen it yet, but you shared your thoughts on Marvel's latest movie. And I covered a New Zealand film that we've both seen.
Coming Home in the Dark. So it's a great week for long titles, I think, in cinema. But yeah, two films, very different films to discuss. But yeah, so, you know, please stick around and enjoy our regular movie chat. And yeah, we'll be with you more regularly than we have been in the past. But yeah, subscribe, rate, review, share the news that Movie Squad podcast is back.
Throughout my life, the Ten Rings gave our family power. If you want them to be yours one day, you have to show me you are strong enough to carry them.
You are a product of all who came before you. The legacy of your family. You are your mother. And whether you like it or not, you are also your father.
I told my men they wouldn't be able to kill you if they tried.
Half 7 on your Friday morning. It is time to head back to the pictures, the people to help us do that every week. Are you Movie Squad? Tristan and Simon, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Tristan, we're going to start this morning with something that hasn't come across my radar.
What?
I know. I know. Stop the presses. We're talking back into the MCU. We're talking Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings.
Yes. So this is a new Marvel movie that's out in cinemas now. And yeah, it's the character of Shang-Chi who, you know, I'll be honest, I was not familiar with, but is a character that was kind of created in the 70s, riding the wave of the popularity of martial arts films and television. So, you know, in its origin, probably has some problematic elements in that I think it was created by white comic book writers. But it's part now of the new phase of Marvel, where we're seeing some of the more lesser-known characters, including the upcoming Eternals, and there's going to be a Moon Knight TV show. Like, some of the characters that I think the real fans know, the deep cuts, and they're going to get, you know, the kind of the marquee value. So now, I've seen this, Simon, you haven't, but I mean, in terms of Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings, was there anything that was kind of attracting your eye to this, if you did not know anything about the character?
Well, I definitely didn't know anything about this character. And the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and I don't just mean the last 10, 12 years of it, but just historically, when it comes to Asian characters and representation, has been pretty poor. I mean, when you think of the Mandarin being one of their iconic villains, that's a character that they've tried to course correct over the years in cinema. So bit hesitant on that side of things. Excited by the idea that the last time there was a big movie about a sort of undersung or less known batch of characters, it was Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, I think we shouldn't disregard the fact that they were complete unknowns to the rest of us outside of the comic milieu up until that movie came out. The thing that really has me interested in this film is not its relationship to the MCU, but it's an appealing cast and director. Destin Daniel Cretton has made a few clunkers, the director, but he came out with Short Term 12, which is a movie I love. And the cast of this movie is incredibly strong for a Marvel movie.
Yeah, it's a, I'll get into it in a moment, but it's a mix of kind of new faces, some familiar faces, and then some just like...
icons.
Icons, yeah, I would say. Definitely one that I'm excited about is Tony Leung, who is best known in both, action films from Hong Kong, like Hard Boiled and Infernal Affairs, the original film that The Departed was based on, but is also known more to art house audiences for his great collaborations with Wong Kar-wai, and then also films like Ang Lee's Lust Caution. And this is his first English language film, I believe, and he plays the villain in this. So it's quite exciting. I think for some audiences, they'll just be going, who is this guy? But for others, it's just like, wow, to see this sort of...
It's a Clooney caliber, higher than Clooney.
Because he's so good. He's such a great kind of actor who has this sort of, matinee charisma. So to see him in this, you get the sense that there's some quality happening here. But the main character, Shang-Chi, is played by Simu Liu, who is kind of a new star. I think those who watch the show Kim's Convenience will know him as a supporting figure, but he's also a stunt person, and he plays the title role. And we find him in the movie working as a valet in San Francisco. He's living an unassuming life with his best friend, Katie, played by Awkwafina from The Farewell and Ocean's 8. And, they're just, they're just kind of having fun, doing karaoke, riding around in the vehicles that they get as valets. They're on the bus one day, and then some henchmen step up to Shang-Chi and demand his emerald pendant. And what do you know? He busts out some amazing martial arts skills, and we find about his history through flashbacks peppered throughout the movie, where he has been raised by Zhu Wenwu, played by Tony Leung, an ancient Chinese warlord who has become immortal and invincible due to these 10 rings, these 10 magic rings that just give him a great power and have, done him wonders in the aging business, because he's lasted hundreds and hundreds of years. But he has also fathered two children through meeting a woman named Ying Li, played by Fa La Shen, who comes from a hidden mystical village and has powers of her own. And so there's a complicated kind of backstory as to how this main character kind of grew up, trained to be an assassin, but turned his back on his father and his kind of father's nefarious business practices. So I won't get into all the details there. And this being a Marvel movie, there are also a few cameos by some other Marvel characters from different movies, which I won't spoil. But overall... this is a film that sort of takes the Marvel universe into the martial arts realm. Before, with Marvel movies, you would say, oh, that's a superhero movie, but I think we're at the point now where Marvel Studios will be absorbing all genres, and so all future movies will be a variation of some other genre. So this is a martial arts movie, and it has some really wonderful fight sequences, particularly in the first half of the film. And overall, I had a lot of fun. I was not familiar with the character or the main actor, but I think he's quite good. He's a good physical presence. I don't think he's got everything to make him a leading man, but the film has everything else around him, including great, comedy from Awkwafina, and then Tony Leung, I think, is really great in the role of the sort of villain father figure. And then we also got another legend who shows up later on, Michelle Yao, who plays a kind of another mentor on the positive side of things. So overall, I had a good time. The one drawback, I would say, that the climax takes place in a kind of fantasy village, and there's a big battle, and it feels a bit familiar to a lot of other previous Marvel movies. And particularly, I think the overuse on CGI, sometimes my just eye can't focus on what's going on. And so I wish they could have handled it a little bit differently. But overall, I had a great time with Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings. I don't know, Taylor, does this sell it to you? Will you be going to the cinemas to check out
How has it passed you by? Because you're the biggest Marvel head that I know.
Like, let me clarify when I say it's passed me by. So I knew this was coming. Mm. It went to the very back depths of my mind until I saw recently on one of those YouTube talk shows, Tony Leung, Simu Lee, doing an interview, and talking about it. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's a thing that's coming out. And it's like you said, Tristan, one of those things that maybe one of those people who's a little bit less known than other people in the Marvel universe because he was still appearing on these, like, YouTube talk shows.
Yeah, even you saying YouTube talk shows, I was like, oh, they got YouTube talk shows now.
They got those, or TV shows or whatever you want to call them. And he was sort of reflecting on, like, working with Tony Leung and being like, people aren't going to know this guy, but people who do know, like, they know that it's a huge deal. And so I was standing there in between takes just asking him a million questions. So you could see that he was really stoked about it, and he was sort of like on the precipice of, I don't know, doing the whole big Marvel celebrity thing. I definitely want to go and see this for lots of different reasons. You've named a lot of them, so one that I'll be heading along to see for sure.
Yeah, it's, look, it's, you know, I mean, with the Marvel movies, Simon, are you always happy to turn up to each and every one, or do you think there's things that they can work on in because it's a bit of a transitional phase, I think, recently.
Yes, look, I am concerned that they have that the MCU Galactus style is just absorbing all cinema and genres. I guess that's a concern I do have. And it's true. Marvel films, I think, have a ceiling. I don't think, you know, there are very, very, very good ones. I don't think any of them have reached the heights of great cinema, and I'm sure people will make the case for Black Panther, which was nominated for Best Picture, and other, you know, Avengers Endgame, whatever you want to say, and that's fine. They are very, very good. I do think they have a cap, though. They also have a very high floor. You know, you don't see any more really bad Marvel movies because the quality control is such. So, yeah, they're a bit homogenized, and you know what you're getting, but you know what you're getting. And that's a reliable thing because there are a lot of blockbusters that you have high hopes for and they turn out to be terrible. Marvel ones float in the middle. But you make an interesting point about this one passing you by. With all the tumultuous events that have affected cinemas and blockbuster releases, certainly, the idea of a marquee movie these days doesn't quite mean the same thing. This one, unlike Black Widow, isn't going to streaming at the same time. It's only in cinemas. Great for us here in Perth, not so much people in other parts of the world or even the country. But yeah, it is interesting that we now enter a phase where I hope, for the RTRFM community at least, they are as aware of Shang-Chi as they are the art house films that we're talking about, the films that you do go to the cinema to see. That makes me excited.
Yeah, and, you know, there have been a few reviews, particularly in the US, and a bit of controversy about whether this film was adequately promoted by Marvel and the studios. But, you know, the shoe's on the other foot. It was a success at the box office last week, you know, in terms of America and internationally, so which is a positive sign. And I think that people who've already seen it, it would be great to hear what they thought. But yeah, this is, I think, on the, you know, the quality control, as you say, with Marvel is pretty high, but I think this is quite good. I think, you know, having a director like, is it Destin?
Destin Daniel Cretton,
Destin Daniel Cretton, you know, he, there's good character drama, there's good moments where you sort of are engaged with these kind of new characters that you're being introduced to, and enough good, you know, action sequences to you know, keep you, looking for more.
We should also just add very quickly, there was a good conversation on your Facebook page, Tristan, or was it the Movie Squad page? Our page. People chiming in to say they saw it and they really appreciated the cultural representation, which has been very absent over the last two decades of Marvel films.
Yeah, an interesting one. If you have seen Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings, please let us know. 0405 921 921. Movie Squad is back for part two in just a moment.
Got a whole place to yourselves. So I should probably introduce myself, shouldn't I? I'm Mandrake. I'm a magician. I make things disappear.
Yo,
here on Movie Squad. Taylor, Tristan and Simon here with you as we have a look at our second film this week, Simon, Coming Home in the Dark.
Coming Home in the Dark. Now, compared to Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings, this film comes from New Zealand and cost $1.4 million to make. So we are definitely on the other end of the spectrum. We're also on the other end of the spectrum of tone, I would say. Shang-Chi being a family film, or, you know, at least a crowd-pleasing film, a four-quadrant movie, if you will. Coming Home in the Dark, it's going to be for very specific audiences who have a fairly strong stomach. This is a movie, actually, that Tristan saw a couple of weeks before I did and had kind of passed me by, Taylor, similar to how Shang-Chi had passed you by. And Tristan had mentioned, you know, I don't want to take words out of your mouth, but the reason you were so keen to see it was because you had heard it takes a very specific and shocking turn. And as soon as you had mentioned that to me, I was like, I got to watch this thing tonight. And you were right. You may have even undersold it because this movie definitely, you know, I won't spoil that element of it, but there are several gut punch moments in this movie. Is it a thriller? Is it a horror? It's somewhere in between, but it does take place in the realm of the real. It is not supernatural, but definitely deals with horrific themes. But begins with a family basically going on a secluded drive in New Zealand. They're a family of four. You've got Hoagie, played by Eric Thompson, the father, Jill, played by Miriamma McDowell, and their two teenage boys. And they're going on this, you know, road trip of a sort. They're going on a long drive. It's, as you would expect from any kind of scary movie, pretty benign to begin with. It's just regular family stuff. They're having a few laughs. They have a few minor arguments. But ultimately, they're having a picnic when two very, very creepy dudes, Mandrake, played by Daniel Gillies, and Tubbs, played by Matthias Luofutu, happen upon them and start harassing them, ultimately. And ultimately abduct the foursome and take the family in a car ride back home. But it's not to the home that they would necessarily be anticipating. It's not their home that they're going to. Tristan knows, because he's seen it, that I'm dancing around a lot of the plot here because I don't want to ruin any of the surprises. But this is an incredibly intense film, one that just had me very deeply unnerved the entire time. It's not a movie that has, you know, flashes of light post the first 10 minutes. You have to know going in that you're going to be entering the depths of hell to a degree. and I loved it. It's a great movie. I want to say that now because I don't want to frighten people away. But you got to know heading in because there will otherwise be mass walkouts. I think it is that kind of movie that if you've not steeled yourself for it, it's going to be a bit of a shock to the system. But here's what I really liked about it is that, you know, it's very similar in subject matter, let's say, to Wolf Creek. Just, I don't know if you agree with that. I think it's significantly better than Wolf Creek. And there's a bit of meat on the bone here. And the director, James Ashcroft, and the writer, his co-writer, Eli Kent, as a playwright, They're doing something quite interesting here in that they're asking you to at least consider the idea of having empathy for monsters. And the idea here being that monsters aren't necessarily supernatural. They exist in our world, but how are they made? And are we able to have empathy for young men who are treated badly by systems, by institutions that become monsters in manhood, when it's contrasted with actual violence against young men and young people in this film. And there are a couple of other teenagers that pop up and we see some pretty horrific things done to them as well. So it's this interesting sort of roller coaster ride in that you're going, oh, I can't believe that this film is going to these depths and that these monsters on screen are doing what they're doing. But we are forced to reckon with how they were made. And it does come down to a really affecting climax. And I think Daniel Gillies is a really charismatic's the wrong word, but a really compelling and strange villain in this movie. But equally good is Matthias Luofutu, who has one line of dialogue at the end of the film, and it just hits you. And that was quite an affecting moment for me, even though he is also contributing to the horror of this movie. Tristan, Did Coming Home in the Dark have enough meat for you? Was it a bit too thin? Was it just more of the horror thrills?
Well, I saw this during the weekend when the Melbourne International Film Festival did an online kind of... you could rent films that they were showing as part of their festival because they had to cancel. So Myth Play was where I saw it. And it was not actually a film I was looking forward to seeing. I had read about it. I'd read too much about it. So I knew going in what was going to happen. But I was just like, I'll see this so that I can review it later on. So it's definitely not a film that I was just like going, I must see this. Because, you know, some things that I know are going to be grim or brutal, I'm just also like, you know, like a lot of other people thinking, why would I want to spend my time?
When am I going to be in the mood?
Yeah, in that world. But I was glad I did watch it because it was better than I expected, particularly when you see a lot of the advertising is around the character of Mandrake and Daniel Gillis, who's worked in television and film. He's kind of like a very, you know, conventionally attractive kind of young man. And I sometimes think about like when actors get that chance to play like a criminal or a psychopath and how it can go in very wrong kind of showy ways. Whereas I think the way he played it was just really well done. It was very kind of, yeah, subtle and intriguing and compelling. And the actors, I think the most recognizable actor for the Australian audiences will be Eric Thompson, the husband of this family, because he's been in shows like Packed to the Rafters. And so it's interesting to see this kind of, you know, someone I'd associate with kind of more upbeat, you know, Australian television being put through quite, you know, a night of hell. And it is a film that has similarities to, yeah, Wolf Creek, also the Haneke, which I've never seen film, Funny Games, that idea of a family being abducted. But I think it's got a lot more going on than either of those two films. It's not a straight-out horror film, and it's not also something that's kind of like wagging its finger at you going, how can you enjoy this violence? It is showing violence that is not meant to be enjoyed, but asking you to engage in some very complicated questions, which has to do, without getting into too much detail, with complicated matters in terms of New Zealand's history and the history of their education system, so which, you know, Australia is not absolved from in any way. So, yeah, this is a film that is confronting, but I was glad that I saw it, and I thought it was really good at what it did. It was Taylor, I don't know.
Yeah, we talk a lot about movies that are one and done's, right? You watch them once, and even if you thought they were great, you're like, I'm not touching that again. And this would fall into that category. Taylor, what is your capacity or what is your appetite for those one and done's?
I don't know. I'm trying to think of some that I've watched recently, but you mentioned sort of akin to like Wolf Creek-ish. Like how severe, like is it more sort of brutal than that?
What I would say, well, okay, so...
I know you can't give it
away. No. But what I'll say is it's not gorier than Wolf Creek. I would say it's not even particularly gory at all.
Right.
It's violent, but it's not something where you're like, oh my God. It's just very harrowing and unsettling because it is relentless in its intensity and the subject matter. But it's also not relishing the violence the way that Wolf Creek did. And I think Wolf Creek 2 is a much better film than the original Wolf Creek because Wolf Creek 2 is basically a black comedy. You know, it's almost a satire of Wolf Creek. But the first one is just very cruel, and especially knowing that it's based on, you know, inspired by real events, very hard to reckon with why anyone would want to watch that movie. Coming Home in the Dark just has so much more going for it and more going on that I think you can sit down to it and be challenged by it, but still get something from it.
Listening to sort of the way that you've described it, Simon and Tristan, and then reading what you send me every week, which this week was a grim thriller from New Zealand, which focuses on a family camping on holiday who come across the path of two dangerous criminals, has just reinforced that you should not go camping to me.
Yes. I agree. You shouldn't go camping when everything goes well.
Yeah,
I think,
exactly.
Yeah. We have some friends who are going camping this weekend. And
they shouldn't.
But just when they described to me, it's like, I would not want to do that at all. But yes, this movie would reinforce a fear of camping. But I was never going to do that anyway. So that's fine with me.
Is this in cinemas? Like, is this something you need to see on a big screen?
Yeah, I mean...
Well, it's in cinemas. It's at Luna Leaderville. I mean, because the engagements are kind of limited across Australia. But, yeah, you can follow Monster Fest for more details on Monster Pictures. But, yeah, it's at Luna. And I think there's... I don't know if it's been and gone, but check the website because there is an event where there's a Q&A or an introduction by the director.
I think that may have been last night or tonight. But regardless, check your listings because that would be very interesting. It's to answer your question, go see it in the cinema because you know, we all love watching movies at home. It's been a convenience for the last year and a half. But if you want to get lost in a movie, there's still no better way to do it than in a big, dark room. And, yeah, you're going to be walking into something that's going to stick with you. But if you have that appetite, I think it is really rewarding, and it's a very well-made film.
All right. If you're going to go and see Coming Home in the Dark, let us know. 0405 921 921. That's Movie Squad for this week. You can restream at our website. Tristan and Simon, same place, same time next week.
Thank you. Sounds good. Well, there you go. Another great episode of the Movie Squad podcast. And, here we are. We're looking forward to more weekly reviews, Simon, and hopefully maybe a return to the original episodes that we did in the past. But they're all available for people to restream and listen to if they've not already checked them out.
All still very relevant, all still very interesting. So just make sure you subscribe. Interviews, original content, our regular reviews, because that's what people really want. They just want to know, tell me what to see. There's too much out there. Tell us what to see. We'll be providing that to you via the Movie Squad podcast with a variety of special guests. But in the meantime, thank you for listening thus far. And we hope that you hear us again next week.
Thank you for listening to this RTRFM podcast. RTRFM is a community organisation and relies on volunteer and listener support. Visit rtrfm.com.au for more podcasts and other great content, as well as details on how you can support the station. You can also download our app and access RTRFM anytime and anywhere on your mobile device.